Andy?
Yeah, Ananda.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
Good.
Good.
And how are things? How is life in general?
Life is good. I haven't done one of these from behind the wheel of my car in a while because I haven't been commuting to work in a while. So, feels good.
Oh, yeah. I just got back in town from actually was over in Slovenia at Punk Rock Holiday. And
that sounds awesome. Tell me about that.
It's crazy. It's in Tolmin, Slovenia, which kind of seemed like sort of in the middle of nowhere, but it's this just crazy, like 5,000 person, 5-day punk festival. Like the Lagwagon and Bad Religion were like the headliners this year. You know, it's just different bands each year, but I started going, that was my fourth year. I started going after, in 2014, I was in Amsterdam for work, and there's this punk band from the UK called Darko that I really liked, and they were playing like 3 hours away in Germany. So after I was done working, I went over there, saw the show, and I met these guys, and then, they were great. And then they were playing at the Punk Rock Holiday in 2015. So I went to that. And then, like, they introduced me to just all these other friends of theirs and different bands in Europe, and it started this cycle where every summer I have to go to Europe for these two music fests, you know, Punk Rock Holiday, but my absolute favorite is one called Conrad Fest, which is really small. It's about 800 people in the middle of the Franconian forest. And, like, this year, Wilhelm Scream was the headliner there. And the band I'm currently playing in, we got to play there this year, too. We did about a week-long tour ahead of it. It's pretty awesome.
So tell me about the band that you're playing in right now.
We're called Head Honcho, and you know, it's a bunch of old dudes who try to do it on our when we can, you know. And it's sort of like our bowling league, but we try to take it seriously. And you know, after a few years of meeting all these folks in Europe, we got invited to play at that Conrad Fest festival, and so we set up a tour ahead of it, and we went on it with some friends of ours in a Scottish-Belgian band called The Effect Heuristic. And they're complete shredders, by the way. So it was just a crazy, awesome experience. You know, the stuff we're playing now is the type of stuff I wish I could have played when I was younger, but it just wasn't good enough. So we try to make it as fun for ourselves as possible, and doing that tour was definitely the highlight.
What's the lineup for Head Honcho? Who are the guys, and where did you meet all of them?
The other guitar player's name's Matt Powell, and he and I, like, we met from a band I was in earlier in Seattle called Gut Bomb, and we were not very good, but we got Matt just through, you know, an ad in the local paper looking for another guitar player, but he and I both have an affinity for Brian Baker and Dag Nasty, and he's an excellent guitar player, so we were convinced, you know, when we first met him, he was the right guy, and he was, and you know, so everything I've done musically since then has been with him, because we play really well together, and so I've known him, I've been playing with him in different bands, and for 16 years now. And the bass player played for a little while in Gut Bomb. That's like how we met him. And so I've been playing with him for probably 10, 12 years. And the singer, we met through a friend about 6 years ago. And his name's PJ. Bass player's name is Lumpy. That's his nickname, Lumpy, but that's what everyone calls him. And the singer's name is PJ. He's from he's actually from Rockford, Illinois. But he was perfect fit for us, and it's been a great fit ever since we met him. And let's see, the drummers our buddy Doug, who's actually like drums is like his second instrument. He's a incredible guitar player and a great singer, and he's in a band in Seattle called Phantom Racer, and he fronts that band, but he also plays drums for us, and known him for maybe 3 years now, I think, and just through friends. And when we lost our drummer to it, he had some surgery that was taking him out for quite a while, and when we lost our drummer, he volunteered to step in and do it, and he's done a great job since. So
What's the scene like in Seattle now?
It's not great. I mean, it's a close-knit scene. People are good to each other, and there's a lot of support for each other. So from that standpoint, it's pretty awesome. But it's not great in terms of, you know, there's not a ton of venues playing punk, and there's not a ton of people going to the shows all the time. But, you know, it's a scene where if you work for it, you can get some good turnouts and stuff, and people are always supportive of each other. But you know, it's not ideal. It'd be great if there was another 10,000 people in the city who were into going to see live punk shows, you know?
But
I guess that's sort of the thing almost everywhere, I guess.
What made you go out there?
Just needed to do something else. My options were, at that point, I left Fresno when I was 21, and it was either go to Norfolk and go to ODU at that point, or come out to Seattle. You know, my buddy Denton Lindau, who went to Herndon High School, but he played in FSA and Enough, you know, Reston, band called Enough and Reston. He was coming out here, and, you know, we've been friends since we were like 12, so. But yeah, that sounds good. My dad lives out here, but he and I weren't close at the time, so that wasn't a primary consideration. But silver lining is he and I did get close after moving out, so it was a great decision for me. And I, you know, met my wife out here, so it worked out. But yeah, just, you know, don't want to. At a certain point, it's hard to stay in your hometown forever.
And you and Denton never played in a band together?
Well, we played in Gut Bomb together for. Out here. We never played in the band together at home. We played and Gut Bomb together out here, but that was, you know, 10 years after I moved out here. So we'd been living out here for like 10 years. And then it just, I don't know, we just started messing around. And that was how Gut Bomb formed. And that was, you know, that's where we met Matt. And so his predecessor for Head Honcho. And we had Matt and I were in a band for a little while between Gut Bomb and Head Honcho called Wadsworth, but we didn't really do anything. It was like a couple of years of trying to get it together, finally getting it all together, and then having it fall apart. Typical band story.
Yeah. So Gut Bomb just broke up, and you and Matt went forward, and you and Denton stayed friends, but he wasn't a part of anything after that?
Yeah, like Denton and I are still great friends. He actually, like, he and his wife watched our daughter while my wife and I were gone. You know, they watched her for this last trip we were on. So it's, you know, that's being in bands together, like most bands eventually fall apart. So the fact that, you know, you're in bands with friends and something goes wrong, it's like, that's just the way it goes. It doesn't really have to have a bearing on the friendship, you know?
Do you remember how you met Denton?
We met, in before seventh grade at Langston Hughes in orientation, summer orientation. And so he was one of the first new people I met, you know, going into Langston Hughes from Terrasset.
And you grew up in Reston?
Yeah, like I was in Reston from 5th grade until I was like 21.
Where were you before 5th grade?
Virginia Beach. So I lived like most of my childhood there until about 10 and then moved up to Reston.
Was it hard making the adjustment when you moved to Reston, or were you able to meet a bunch of like-minded dudes?
I guess it sort of depends how you look at it. Like, from a school standpoint, the move was catastrophic for me. I had been a straight-A student prior to that, and I don't think I got, with the exception of one creative writing class that I really enjoyed and worked hard at, I don't think I got anything higher than a C for the rest of my school career, which ended at a second attempt of ninth grade. So, from that standpoint, it was pretty bad. But from, kind of a personal growth and friendship and life experience standpoint, I wouldn't have traded it for the world. It was, I met a lot of great people doing a lot of, like, ridiculous stuff that, in hindsight, probably was not always the best decision-making involved. But it was fun, and learned a lot and got to make a lot of mistakes then that I didn't have to repeat as an adult. So that's a little bit of a silver lining, I suppose. But, I wouldn't have traded that for the world. But the one thing I would do if I had to do over is I would have stayed in school, because that was actually a point where things got a little difficult for me. When I stopped being at school and stopped seeing everybody every day, things got a little different and a little weird. But
was South Lakes that you dropped out of?
Well, so I was at South Lakes. I had to go to summer school between 8th and 9th grade just to get into South Lakes. And I did that at Langley. And actually, that's where I met Sean Lawrence, who ultimately later lived. His sister, Kelly Lawrence, I think, went to South Lakes. And Sean and them, they lived, like, I think, just at the outskirts of Reston, like Fox Mill area, I think. But so then I get into 9th grade at South Lakes, and I, continued to do the same crappy work that I was doing and failed. So I went back in what would have been my 10th grade year, but for a second try in 9th grade, and I ended up getting expelled. And it was a series of things, but the final event was I threw a chair at my teacher, and they were just like, yeah, you're done here. So I came to Seattle when I was 15. To enroll in school here, but within a few weeks I was screwing around again. So ultimately the principal just came up to me and was like, just go get your GED and then we don't have to deal with any of this nonsense. So I did, and then I came back. And then I came back to Northern Virginia once school was handled. So I was only gone for about 2.5 months. But then coming back, I just basically sat around, didn't really do much except drink whenever people were free. Because I wasn't going to school, I wasn't working, I wasn't really doing much. But by the time...
But you were playing guitar.
Yeah, I was playing in bands and stuff, and that was fun. But how it was in Reston, it was tough to, like, there weren't tons of shows to play,
No, that was one of the frustrating parts of the whole scene. It sounds like you were pretty angry back then. I mean, if you threw a chair at your teacher.
Yeah,
and by the way,
well,
like, I was known to throw a chair or two back in South Lake also. So no judgments whatsoever.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, I did it. So, I was, but I couldn't tell you what I was angry about. I didn't really have it so bad, But, for me personally, a lot of it was about an inability to deal with anger at all. And most of the people, even people I'm still good friends with, they've got some horrible stories about, me losing my temper and doing dumb stuff and making poor decisions. And, so that stuff, until I dealt with that, it was going to lead to trouble. And it's still something I deal with a little bit, still something that, I got to work at. I have to be cognizant of, what I'm thinking and how I'm reacting and making sure that, reasonable. But when you're 15, 16 and you're, just getting high and drinking all the time, it's that much harder to make good choices. So it was probably a necessary step on the path, but it's definitely a whole bunch of actions that I regret for sure. But you can't go back, so you just try to make sure that you learn from them and don't do them again, you know?
Was punk rock something that you were able to channel that anger into, or, you know, was it something that helped you with your anger?
No, I mean, it definitely helped me all around. I mean, I don't know, it probably did help me with my anger, but more directly it helped me just because I'm, you know, had these friends and we were in this thing together and you didn't really feel alone, you know, and when shit did happen that you thought was horrible and made you angry, you didn't feel like you had to deal with it by yourself. And that's, you know, I had a really supportive mother, you know, it's not really a statement or judgment on that. It's just that at that age, it's hard to really hear advice from people you don't feel know what you're going through. So when the people in your circle are experiencing the same stuff you're experiencing and, you know, and they tell you stuff, you believe it, you know, because they've been there. And you know, so, yeah, I mean, it definitely helped me then. And it hasn't really stopped, you know, like all these folks that I met in Europe and stuff, I met them at a time in my life when I was going through some difficult stuff in my marriage, and you know, and that all worked out. It did, you know, but it took a long time to kind of reset, you know. It's sorry, I'm kind of getting off topic here, but it's like nobody tells you how to be an adult. Nobody tells you the things that are going to be hard. Nobody tells you that, you know, a relationship is something that requires constant work. It's not something you can just set up and forget, you know. And nobody tells you how hard it is to have kids and that how challenging that's going to be. And then nobody tells you that you're going to learn the most about yourself by seeing your kids, because you're going to see the way they behave and you're going to know where it came from, you know? So
I think maybe everybody tells you, but you don't believe them.
Yeah, you're right.
You have to kind of experience it for yourself.
You're absolutely
to really
right.
Understand that stuff.
You're absolutely right. I think they tell you, but I don't think you hear it because you can't really believe it until you've experienced it. But, you know, so punk rock, I mean, punk rock saves me repeatedly throughout my life. It really has. It's like, it's the thing that's kind of been there for me at all the darkest moments, you know?
Was Dag Nasty, was that like the gateway drug?
It's sort of hard to say. I mean, really, originally, I first got into, you know, kind of just straight kind of heavy metal and butt rock, and then started getting into, like, speed metal and death metal, and then started getting to punk from there. And it's like, and I still kind of, I love bands all across all those genres now. And so I'm not, it's hard to say what kind of the initial thing was, but, like, Dag Nasty, Uniform Choice, like, They really kind of set the tone for me early. And then a little later, Social Distortion and RKL really kind of brought it around for me, kind of full circle. And I don't know. It's just music that you connect to, you know. I mean, you see yourself in it, you know. And that's when somebody can write a song where you see yourself in it. That's pretty empowering, you know. It. And again, it's one more way to know that you're not alone and you're connected.
When did you start playing? And did you take lessons? Were you self-taught? Did other, you know, guys from the neighborhood show you Yeah, I think it was like, about, what was it?
I think it was about 14 when I got my first guitar and started playing pretty much immediately, you know, as soon as I could play anything. Started a band with Dave Logan, playing drums, and I can't remember who was playing bass for us originally, but we didn't have a singer, and Tim Barry kind of came in to help us with our earliest songs, so we had somebody to do vocals and help write lyrics and stuff, and we were pretty awful, but it eventually turned into Doubt, and that was, you know, that was great for me. That was a lot of fun and pretty. It started a lifelong love of playing music.
We can build anything because our bond is strong. Because of your help, it will work forever for me, for you.
So, what were, like, the first songs that Doubt wrote? What was the first one that really came together that you remember?
It's probably not the first one, but you know how it's hard to remember some specifics so long ago, but one of the earlier ones that actually sort of stood up, at least for the duration of Doubt, was a song called The Empire. And it was pretty simple, but even then, when I look back, like, I see certain elements of it that I still apply to my writing, you know, to my songwriting style. So I guess it's, in, you know, in a way, for me, it's historically relevant personally, you know, my own playing. Trying to think, it was Chris Williams, though, who wrote those lyrics and was singing for us at that time. And DJ Grimes had sung for us before that, I think, but I'm just not really remembering the songs from early on like that.
And did you guys, were you part of playing like house parties and garage shows and basement shows and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. That was kind of the bread and butter of the limited amount of shows that we could get at the time. You know, later on we got a chance to play, you know, GC Space a couple few times or whatever, and the occasional show here or there, outside of Reston, but it was mostly those shows and, you know, and Jamperman that we had to look forward to, those house parties and Jamperman.
Yeah, well, I've seen the pictures from the Reston times of you guys, of you in particular. There's a good shot of you playing, I think, Jamperman too, at the Reston Community Center.
Yeah, that one for sure we were there. I really thought we had played at both of the first two, but I don't remember playing in Herndon, so it's possible that I'm, like, a lot of things that you remember in hindsight are just not quite the way you recollect.
Well, James Fisher just posted a bunch of great shots up at the Jams for Man website of the first Jam for Man. So if you want to see some great pictures from there, just go to the Facebook page.
It might actually jog a memory. Maybe it jogs a memory or two.
Yeah, that guy took some amazing shots from there. There's just these really beautiful black and white pictures. And I don't remember seeing doubt in those pictures.
Yeah, that's probably accurate. I just don't know.
Live Avail and Crunchy Water shot.
Yeah, those pictures are actually, Jamie's pictures have kind of always been amazing. It's crazy that he was taking great pictures as a kid.
Yeah, that guy's a heck of a photographer. I can't wait for him. Apparently, he has more. He has stuff from, like, almost all the Jam for Man.
Yeah, that's cool. I think it's cool that you're doing this, too, by the way. It's fun to think back about the stuff. But it's also, it's important to remember, you know, what were the things that made us who we were then. And it's fun and, well, frankly, sometimes therapeutic to try to reconcile who you were then versus who you are now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But, it's also about... It's about the community, it's about Reston, and it's about the music. Reston just was a breeding ground for great musicians.
Yeah, it really was, actually. It's kind of crazy how many people got into music and did something with it. And, you know, at varying degrees, right? Not everybody had, like, the success of Avail or Spooky, right? But a lot of people came out of there, like, contributing some really amazing music, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, look at you. You're still rocking out. You're still making music, and you're making music in Seattle, and you're making music touring around Europe.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
Oh, it is. It's amazing, and it's like, I mean, that's why I say, like, punk has saved me, you know, probably a dozen times in my life, and it's, you know, that connection, again, and it's, you know, talking about it out loud, I'm seeing the pattern, too, that I keep referring to this, like, this sort of connection and just being a part of something bigger than yourself. And, like, one of the things that we experienced in Europe is that connection is maybe even a little stronger, you know, than it is here. Like, the way the bands support each other. You know, all the venues over there, when you tour in Europe as a punk band playing punk venues, you go there and they've cooked you food. Like, they didn't give you money for food. They didn't buy you food. They bought ingredients and cooked you food. And this is true at almost every venue we played at. Almost every venue in the back has, you know, some Nike Funk beds that they build out. They're clean and comfortable. They change the sheets for you, you know, when you come. Like, you get a place to sleep, you get food, you actually get paid a little bit of money. And it's, you know, some of that stuff has more to do with the way the economics and the government funds and finances are over there, but not all of it. I think the majority of it has to do with the just kind of that connectedness and that level of community. Like, when somebody books you at their venue, they feel an obligation to make sure you're cared for and taken care of, you know. And that's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing, and it's really cool to see that exists elsewhere. It's shocking to see that it might exist on an even deeper level, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's great to hear that it's happening on a deeper level. I mean, I think the Reston scene was, like, sounds like it was a pretty supportive, close-knit scene. And, you know, the DC scene at that time also seemed like those bands played a lot of shows together, played a lot of the same venues, and, you know, supported each other a lot, too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I probably would have experienced more of it if I had, you know, I guess, been more aggressive, frankly, about music. In hindsight, that's something I think I do regret a little bit, is not trying harder, taking it a little bit more seriously sooner. But, you know, whatever. Everything comes in its own time. And, like, you know, so my first real tour, that tour in Europe, that's the first real tour that I've been on. I mean, sure, I've played, we play outside of Seattle all the time, but it's usually a one-off show here or there. And so, you know, 46 years old, my first tour, but I'll take it, man. It was amazing, you know. I wasn't ready to do it 20 years ago, even though it would have been nice if I could have, but I was ready now, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to do it, and it's something I'll never forget.
Well, so in terms of looking back, not just on Doubt, but your growth as an artist through your career, what are some of the recordings that you've done, some of the songs that you've written that do stand out and that you do look back on and that you're really proud of?
I mean, I honestly think, and maybe this is, again, just a musician thing, right, always looking for progress, but I honestly think the best stuff that I've been a part of is the stuff that is cute. Like, we're going to be recording at the end of September. We're going to do about 6 or 7 songs. Well, we've got about 18 or 19 written, but we haven't released anything in, like, 3 years or something, so we need to get something out. And, like, I'm really excited to get that stuff out there because it's just, I'm always trying to get, now anyway, over the last few years, you know, I've started to take music a little more seriously. And that was a byproduct of meeting all those guys in Europe. It was inspiring, you know, and it was like, yeah, maybe I can do this a little better than I'm doing it. Maybe I can try a little harder. And so, you know, over the past few years, I feel like I've gotten a bit better, and there's new little tricks and tips and techniques and stuff that I'm trying to get in there. And, like, that's the fun, exciting part, is to challenge yourself with that stuff. And then when it turns out, it actually sounds good, even better, you know. But so that's, I mean, maybe a bit of a cop-out answer because it's always the next thing, right? The next thing's always better than what you did before. But that being said, like, all the stuff that we've released in Head Honcho, I'm proud of. I think it's good, you know. I think it's, in some cases, it's even really good, you know. But it's the most important thing, I think, for me anyway, musically, is that I enjoy it, that my bandmates enjoy it. It's even better if everybody else enjoys it. But let's be honest, like, we're not trying to do anything super crazy with it. We're not trying to, you know, like, quit our jobs and tour constantly. We can't really afford it, you know. But we want it to be as good as possible. And, I think the growth in my playing, but much more so than my playing, is my songwriting, and growth in my songwriting, I think, is really, that's where I think it's really started. It's gotten better over the last, songwriting's gotten a lot better over the last 10, 12 years. And I think my technical ability's gotten a lot better over the last 2 to 3, you know? But it also helps that I'm playing in a band with really, really good musicians, you know? So I'm constantly challenged and to keep up. I'm constantly challenged to learn new things.
Does Head Honcho have, like, a signature song or kind of the big crowd pleaser?
It's a really simple song, but there's a song called Frank Lloyd Christ. It's the first one from our first EP, which was called On the Wings of a Brick. And it's a short, you know, it's about 1:42 or something. And it's kind of a simple song, but it's one that seemingly is really popular. Like, the last show of our tour in Europe was at Conrad Fest, which is, you know, in this festival in the woods, right? And we were shocked at how many, I mean, I know a lot of people there, but there's 800 people there, and I do not know 800 people there, you know? We were shocked at the crowd turnout, and we were stunned when we hit that song. There were, like, dozens of people in the crowd singing it. It was pretty overwhelming, actually. But so that's probably, I mean, that's the only supporting argument I can give you for sort of a signature song. But it's funny because, again, it's a pretty simple one, but I think it, you know, it captures, I guess, what we try to do, which is try to have maybe just not the most boring of arrangements, try to make arrangements a little more interesting, we try to keep the songs short, and we try to keep them melodic, you know. All that, we're usually pretty happy with the outcome.
That sounds like an amazing experience. That's, you know, that's what you want when you're up there playing for people.
Oh yeah, no, it's crazy. Like to see, you know, a whole bunch of faces that you don't know singing your song in the middle of the woods in Germany. Yeah, there's not much that matches that.
Where are you thinking about recording in Seattle? What's the plan for these 18, 19 songs you're talking about?
So the first, basically the plan is we're going to, if we stick to plan, and plans change constantly, but so we've got this recording coming up the end of September, and that we're going to do it differently than we've done it in the past. In Head Honcho, both of the recordings we've done so far with the same guy. A guy named Jesse O'Donnell. He's a guitar player in a band called Noise, and they're pretty big. Like they play punk rock bowling every year, and like they, you know, they're pretty decently known in the punk scene. But he's an excellent recording engineer, and we recorded with him when we were in Gut Bomb too, and just we know him well. We know how to work well together, so he's been doing that for us. But this time around, we're having him do just the drums, and then. Matt and Lumpy and I are all going to do all the guitars and bass. We're going to do on our own, but we're gonna do them through a split signal. We're going to do a DI, but we're going to do a split signal so that we have a perfectly dry signal that we can reamp later, and then a wet signal through just like a line six interface so that we can hear some effects and distortion while we're playing.
Mm-hmm.
And then for vocals. We're going to be recording with a guy. His name's Ryan Bruce, but his nickname's Fluff. And he plays in a band called Rest Repose, and they tour pretty extensively. But he's also, he has a YouTube channel called, I think it's called Gear Beards and Gear or something like that, where he does, like, gear reviews and stuff. And that's his job. But he's a good recording engineer, and he has really good ideas on vocal melody from, like, kind of a production aspect. And so we'll be doing vocals with him, and it's probably going to get mixed a couple of different options. We'll either use the guy we've used in Denver, I'm totally blanking on his last name, but he's done lots of lanes and a fair amount of, you know, bigger band mixes and stuff too, but I wish he could remember his last name. But anyway, this guy does a really good job, and we'll probably go through him, but we also might use a friend of mine in Italy who's a recording engineer over there. He plays in a band called Disordine, and they're from, like, the Lake Iseo area in Italy. But he's also a sound engineer, and he runs a recording studio. So he's offered to mix it for us as well, too. Or maybe we'll do multiple mixes and see how it sounds. We'll see which one we prefer. But that's kind of the plan, and we'll we'll get it out just so we have something out, and then we're hoping in February to go back and do a full length.
Well, that would be great. I can't wait to hear some of the stuff from there. It sounds like you've got a lot of talented people in mind to help you out with this project.
Oh, yeah, no, we do. I mean, anything in life, not alone music, but anything that has a good outcome usually has a lot of people's fingerprints all over it, and this is absolutely no exception. I mean, anything good we've done, has been because somebody helped us get it across the finish line, whether it was a recording engineer like Jesse giving us much more of his time and talent than we would deserve for how ill-prepared we were at certain times, or just people supporting you by buying your stuff when you say, hey, we're going to record. If anybody wants to buy shirts and CDs, we'd really appreciate it because we are broke and we got to pay for the stuff, So, I mean, there's a thousand different things that go into it, and it's not much worth accomplishing is done without somebody else's help. So this is no different. In fact, I think this is more essential. The more ears that are involved with this, the more different insights we're going to get and the more things we're going to catch that could be better.
So let me ask, I don't know if your kids are old enough to, appreciate any of this music, but...
they're 16 and 12. They're 16 and 12, and they're definitely into music, but it's a mixed bag with punk.
Are there any bands that you've been able to cut through with them and sort of, get them to check out and be into?
There's definitely
the old
punk
days?
Bands. There's punk bands that my son, appreciates songs from, but I don't know if there's any bands overall that he's super into. But one band that we bond over for sure is, and they have strong punk influences, is the kind of college sort of pop band, Say Anything. I don't know if you know those guys, but they're...
Not really well.
Yeah, they're excellent, man. Like, the arrangements and the writing, and like, if you've listened to punk, or especially if you're a punk musician, you'll hear all throughout their songs. There's punk players in history, fingerprints all over their songs, but there are also some really good quirky pop songs in there too, So he really likes them, which I get a lot of joy out of, because I think they're an excellent band, and I think they have a lot of really good influences. So the fact that he likes it makes me happy.
Shame, they made some messed up claims about your mind games. Not alone.
Did the kids play at all? Any instruments?
Not really. Like, my daughter has a ukulele. But, you know, she messes with it a little bit, but it's not a serious thing. And Nathan has an acoustic guitar, which he messes with maybe occasionally, but it mostly just sits there.
So, just to wrap up, you know, I like to ask people kind of what they feel like were their takeaways from being a part of that scene back in Northern Virginia, and what did they learn as a musician from playing in Northern Virginia that they take with them or took with them for the rest of their lives. So if you had to kind of wrap that up, What would you say?
Ooh, that is a toughie, man.
I thought I'd save it for last.
Yeah, no, it's just, it's tough because it's, I mean, so much of, even if it's in small part, like so much of kind of who I am and my outlook on things now was formed, you know, or influenced strongly at that time, you know. I mean, I think that for me, for sure, that understanding, the early understanding for me in my life, that anything I want to accomplish in life that is worth doing is going to need help. I'm going to need other people. I'm going to need help. And, you know, for sure, you know, that's something that I learned there, at least, well, started to learn. With that scene. You know, I guess, like seeing, you know, like Craig Harmison and Mike Munoz and like how just amazingly good guitar players they were at such a young age in LDK, like that was inspiring for me. I mean, that made it real. That made it, on some level, it made it real that like, well, it is possible to actually be that good, you know? And, like, I still, you know, it's maybe every few years, but I will still listen to those LDK recordings because I've got digitized MP3s of that stuff. And, like, for me, it totally stands up. And maybe I'm biased, you know, because it comes from a time in my life. But so do the Avail recordings. And even, you know, to the degree of what we were capable of at the time, like, the Doubt stuff does, too. Like, I don't look back at that stuff like in horror, like even my comments about performances maybe not being as good as they could be. It's like, I'm pretty happy with what it was for who we were at the time, you know? But learning, you know, seeing people do good things and big things, you know, bigger things, and seeing what Avail did and seeing what Spooky was able to do. And, you know, like all of that stuff, like it wasn't surprising to me that those guys went on to do other stuff, and it wouldn't have been surprising to me with almost any of the bands going on to do other bigger stuff later and for long periods of time, because I did see the beginnings of that. You know, you started to see like, there's something real here. There's something legit. This isn't just kids blowing off steam, you know? And I don't know. I guess, to some degree, you know, I started to learn a little bit. It took me a lot longer, but as a musician, I started to learn that, you know, because when I first started songwriting, sorry I'm going around a bit here, but when I first started writing songs, like, I would kind of do everything, and I'd envision everything, and, like, and then I had a hard time early on, like, letting go and letting other people kind of do their thing, and, you know, started to see, especially in a band like LDK, like, that took it, you know, it took everybody involved in the band to make those songs that good. And it's like, well, maybe I should let other people do their thing, you know. And then it got, once there was a time in Doubt where the lineup had Andy Johnston on bass and Spooky on guitar. And, like, you know, some really stupidly good musicians, two of the Transonians guys, right? And, like, when you're in a band with guys like that are that capable, of course you got to let them do their thing, you know. So that's where I think I really learned, like, oh, yeah, it doesn't matter if you think you know what's best. You need to give people space to contribute. And that it was, I, you know, it's a control thing, I guess. You know, as a musician and songwriter, like wanting to like control it so you can ensure the outcome. But what I learned is that while you may have less control over the outcome, the quality of the outcome is better when you let people do their thing, you know. And I definitely think I learned that, at least in part, by seeing bands like, you know, Avail and like the way that different people contributed there, and LDK and like different people contributed there. So that stuck with me. But again, it was the beginning of it. It took me years to really get to a point where I could just be like, you know what? I don't have the answers here. This is what I think. And then to my bandmates later in life, like, this is what I think, but take your spot and go. You know, and that's when I started to get better, and that's when my songwriting started to get better, is when I let people have more input, you know, rather than thinking I knew the right answers.
That's a lesson that we can all learn a lot from.
Yeah, you know, not just in music either, you know?
Absolutely. That's something that I still need to work a lot on and really understand and appreciate. So
yeah,
well, I appreciate you reminding me of that lesson. And if that's what the rest in scene taught you, then that's really good. But that's what
it planted those seeds for sure. And like, and I can trace back, you know, to where those ideas started. And then, but it's just, you know, kind of my own stubbornness and my own shortfalls that made it take longer to see the value of. But eventually I saw it, and, you know, the genesis was there.